Do you like books? I mean, really, really like books? Then you're in the right place. Each week, your host, Sam Hankin, interviews the best of today's top-selling authors and the up-and-coming superstars of modern literature. This is The Avid Reader. Here is your host, Sam Hankin.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Avid Reader. Today, our guest is Kate DiCamillo, author of her latest, Beverly Right Here, published in September by Candlewick. As almost all of you know, Beverly is the recipient of two Newbery Awards, a National Book Award finalist, and has more than 12, way more than 12, I guess now, New York Times bestsellers. And she's been named the National Ambassador for Young People's Literature, and rightfully so. And as most of you already know, from Winn-Dixie to Despereau and so many others, Kate has a special place in children's and young adults' literature. Now her Three Rancheros trilogy, Ramey Nightingale, Louisiana's Way Home, and now Beverly Right Here, that trilogy has occupied my and my guest host Lorelei's attention for some time. So welcome, Kate, and thanks so much for joining us again.
Well, thank you for talking to me again.
So, yeah, last time we spoke, we were talking about Ramey, and like I said before the show, I skipped Louisiana, which is my own fault, but here we are talking about Beverly. And as I said, Lorelei's here to ask you some questions as well.
Yep.
So,
and I'm going to ask Lorelei some questions, so we're going to keep each other busy. And you can chime in, too.
Oh, great. So I'm like the third banana.
Third wheel.
Okay. So for those who don't know, why don't we start by you telling us a little bit about all three girls? Because so much of Beverly in this book is tied to her previous relationships with the other girls and with Buddy, for that matter.
Yeah. Okay. So, Ramey, all three girls showed up for the first time in Ramey Nightingale, and that which was basically Ramey's story about her father leaving it, and also about how these girls became friends. And I finished that book, and I thought, well, that's that, because I don't really go back and revisit characters and novels. I just have never done it. But then Louisiana showed up with this very insistent, demanding voice wanting to tell a story. So I wrote a story about Louisiana, and then when I was finished with that, Beverly appeared and wanted her story told. Although she was, you know, Louisiana was kind of character who kind of grabs you by the shirt collar and shakes you back and forth and makes you listen to her. And with Beverly, it was kind of like crouching down in the forest and waiting for a wild animal to come and eat out of my hand. Much more reticent and doesn't want to talk about herself as much. And Lorelei, you said in the beginning, before we were recording, that Beverly's your favorite.
Yeah.
Can you tell me why?
Just because, I feel I relate to her the most. She makes, like, the most sense out of, like, the books. Like, it's, like, the way you write is, like, something, like, way different than I've ever read. And, like, in, like, the universe that she's in, she makes, like, the most sense by, like, what she says and her thoughts.
Yeah, she's very down to earth, isn't she?
Yeah.
I think she kind of sees things the way they are.
Yeah, for good or bad, Lorelei's a little bit like Beverly, too. Right? Right,
Lorelei? Yeah, I guess.
Okay, Sam, you can ask another question. I'll listen.
Thanks a lot. So, yeah, Beverly is still in this book, and some of the reviews say, one of the reviews specifically says, seemingly hard-hearted at times, and at the very least, irritated by much of what is around her in this world. And that's not like you, but then you, like, fall in love with her. But why?
Why? Because there's this, for me, with Beverly, there's this kind of crusty exterior. But yet, she is actually very tender, and she does, and she's brave with that tenderness. In the first book in Ramey Nightingale, when there's still a scene that I think about where she goes into a nursing home with the other girls, and There's this old lady who's in incredible pain, screaming, "Take my hand," and Beverly walks in and takes her hand and holds her hand and sits down and hums to her and tells her that it will be okay. And that kind of, like, is Beverly in a nutshell, in that she's very brusque and often dismissive, but yet she's very tender.
Yeah, and she has an enormous amount of courage, which is kind of underneath the crust. There's a lot of things under the crust. Like, ask that question, Laurel, about the covers.
Oh, yeah. When you, what inspired you about the covers? Do you think of them the way, like, the characters, like Beverly, the way they look on the cover? Like, when you thought of them, is that how she looked?
Yeah, and, you know, this is something that happens a lot, and it's one of the great things about writing for kids is that so often you get to see somebody bring your characters to life in pictures, which doesn't happen as much when you write for adults. And so I'm very used to, like, I'm a visual. When I write, I see things, and so I have a vision of how the characters look in my head. And then what happens is the art comes along, and it kind of replaces that vision usually, and every once in a while it matches up exactly. So I love the way Louisiana looks. I love the way they went back and Amy June Bates is the artist. She went back and did a new cover for Raimi with a picture of Raimi's face. Beverly, when Beverly's face came in, that was exactly the way I imagined Beverly, so it was kind of like one of those moments when you're like, it almost makes you dizzy because it's like, oh, that's what was in my head, and she painted it. Very moving.
That's so funny because Laurel, I felt the same way, right?
Yeah, I thought she looked like exactly the way I thought of her.
And I thought of her with short blonde hair and bangs.
No, well, Lorelai and I are right, you know, and it was just like, it's like, oh, you recognize her, right? That's kind of like the feeling I had. It's like, oh, there you are, which is like, it makes me so happy because I feel like of all the characters, Beverly is the one that needs to be seen the most because she just, and so much of this book, I think, is, I mean, she's capable of loving, she's capable of being tender, but it's harder for her to accept love and accept tenderness. And in this book, she learns to let herself accept those things.
So, you know, in this book and the two others, and the reviews talk about it too, you almost have like these, for want of a better word, and this is a silly word, Jungian stereotypes. I mean, like, talk a little bit about Iola and then how she kind of mirrors to a certain extent the older women that appear from time to time in the other two.
So how Iola, your voice broke up for a minute.
Sorry.
How
she mirrors the other two women that appear in Raimi and Louisiana.
That's a super interesting point. I had never thought about that.
It's like it
gives me, it's one of those moments where I feel like I'm taking a, you know, an exam. It's like, wow, okay. Yeah, no, it's a very good point. I had never seen that before. But there's an older woman, very old, in Raimi, Mrs. Borkowski. And then there's Granny in Louisiana's story, who's also an older woman and unlike anybody I've ever known or met. But there's also other, there's Bernice who runs the hotel. It's very interesting to think about that. Yeah, and you know, it's this thing where I never see the stories clearly until they're out in the world and people are reading them and telling me things about them. And then I kind of like piece together what they're about. But like when I'm writing, I really never know what I'm doing. Isn't that heartening?
Yeah, it's pretty much my life. So, in this book, well, in all the books, but in this book, like, I don't know, Lorelai, do you agree? I think Mr. C was, like, the funniest guy, don't you?
I don't know.
Who do you think is funny? Freddie?
Yeah, he's kind of,
She. The waitress.
Freddie was awfully fun to write.
Yeah,
and I have to say, She's been in my mind for a long, long time, so it was fun to get her down on the page.
But Mr. C, like when I was practicing law, maybe once or twice, maybe someone came in my head, might have been down on the table, like semi-sleeping. Hold on, just resting my eyes.
Right. Well, he's kind of like a caricature of what we all become like as adults. Like, you suddenly realize that you're not an adult and you don't know what to do, but yet you're in the body of an adult, you know. He's not a mean person. He's just he can't get over how confusing it is to be an adult. I empathize with him.
How did you figure out all the different ties he was wearing?
Yeah, that was
that
cool.
That was fun, too.
See, look.
That's the kind of stuff that I have so much fun with, I have to say.
Oh, you can tell.
You know, for the most part, I'm in the office, you know, with kind of like him, with my head on the desk weeping. And I'm not, you know, writing is so hard for me. But, like, little things like that, like, you know, thinking what kind of ridiculous tie does he have on today, those kind of things cheer me up.
Well, so in opposition to Freddie and Mr. C, you have Elmer in this book, who's like such, you know, such a nice person and such a hero, and yet he has his challenges. And perhaps the lowest point and pivotal point in this book, without spoiling it, is when Beverly kind of rejects a gift. And how did you get to that point? Because it's kind of pivotal, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, I'm surprised to find myself there, which goes back to the whole thing of like not knowing what I'm doing, because I don't work with an outline. I don't think we're moving towards this. It's just in those moments, I'm so in it with them and so devastated for Elmer and also devastated for Beverly, because, I mean, she really likes him and he gives her something. You know, there's that point where he, because he's an artist, and he draws a picture of her, and she doesn't believe that's the way she looks. She doesn't know she's beautiful. And so that's what he's trying to give her more than anything else, is that the idea of who she truly is. And I think that when she rejects him, she's rejecting herself for a minute, you know?
Yeah.
Did you model Elmer after, like, anyone that you've known in your life?
No. And it's so funny because there are characters throughout this, you know, my 20 years of writing now where, like, I'm writing and I have no idea that they're going to show up. And he was one of those. So it's just like, okay, here's a convenience store called Zoom City. Beverly's going to walk in there. And so I'm following along. She walks in. She sees the, you know, the wings on the angel in the painting. But it's just like I'm as surprised about who's holding that book as she is. And then there's that moment when she talks to him and says she thinks that might have been the longest speech she's ever given in her life. And it was wonderful to just listen to her say all that. But I had no idea that he was going to show up. And he's probably, you know, you never want to pick favorites, but he's probably one of my favorite characters that I've ever written about.
Yeah, because, like, his exterior, you know, he's picked on, but he hasn't let it get him down in the slightest, you know?
Yeah, he's managed to hold on to who he is, and because, you know, Jerome, well, we won't give everything away. Not that there's a huge plot in here at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's just little things that happen. But Jerome, Freddie's boyfriend, is one of those terrible, well, we all know people like Jerome. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me of something. Again, because of the reviews also. You know how when people are depressed, people will say to them, why can't you just be happy? Which is the silliest thing to say to someone. So Buddy seems to drive so many memories and sorrow in Beverly's life. And some people who are maybe less than good heart, it might just say, hey, just get over it. So why can't she?
Well, I think that she is getting over it, and it's odd because the death of this dog has allowed her to grieve for lots of other things. And so she's, of course, grieving for the dog specifically, but, like, this loss of him stands in for a loss of a lot of other things that she hasn't properly grieved. Her father, her mother, who has never loved her the right way. And so all of those things kind of get, like, put under the umbrella of Buddy. And so she does her grieving all at once, and she does get past it because she starts to trust and to love.
So I know, and you've said it too, I know a lot of what you write mirrors part of your childhood and adolescence, and not everything. But did you have something that, well, first of all, just like Rami entering the contest, which you did too, was there something in your life that you used as a symbol for all the other things that pained you?
Huh. I feel like I'm in therapy now.
Deep.
You know, no, but I think if I can cast the net wider, that, you know, my father, and we talked about this when Rami came out, my father left when I was 6. And so that loss has informed every story that I've told. And so it's like it's the one that I keep on coming back to. Even when I think I'm not coming back to it, it's still there, and it still shows up and it informs the stories that I tell.
I think that's really good. Some people might say, are you ever going to not do that? But I think it's nice that you do that. And I think people recognize the truth of it. And I think that's part of
the reason. Well, and everybody's grieving something, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Hey, so I said this last time, I got to tell you again. So my daughter, Katie, is a teacher in Florida, and maybe you'll remember this. So every kid in the class wrote a letter to you about Despero, and they all came up with alternate endings. And you wrote a postcard back to them, and since they were in Gainesville, you mentioned the Gators, and they all went berserk. And and then
I do remember that.
And then one of the kids wrote an ending, and you wrote to him, and you said, "God, I wish I had thought of that." And that he was like the king of the class for the rest of the year. And so every kid made Katie copy the letter so that they could all have one forever. Which leads me to, look what you've done. I mean, you're like my heroine because, you know, not only do you change the lives of these kids, but they go on because of you to other things, whether it's the Lord of the Rings or Wind in the Willows or whatever books they go on to. Do you ever really, like really feel that? I mean, you must.
Yeah, it's funny because you were saying all that, and I was laughing about the kids and the letters and the better ending to Despero, and then you said, look at what, and like the smile went off of my face, because it's such a huge concept to think about that. And for the most part, I don't think about it when I've been touring for Beverly, so I've been traveling quite a bit. And I'll hear things, people will say the most amazing things to me in the signing lines. And it's like, I was doing an event at the Carl Museum a couple of weekends ago, and the person who was standing next to me said, how can you stand all the love? It's overwhelming and wonderful, and then I come back and I forget about it, and I think, what's my job? My job is to tell the story. So it's just like, it's one of those things that I'll let in, and then I have to forget about it. But on the other hand, if I think about it just with my mind, I think, you know, lucky me that I get to do something that matters.
Yeah.
My teacher, my literature teacher, she really likes you. When she saw I was reading the book in class, she got really excited.
Yeah.
Will you tell her I said hello?
Yes.
And the funny thing
and
is...
And tell her thank you.
Yeah.
So Lorelai's going to tape this, and then gets to play it in her class, and as usual, I will get no credit. And you do, you seem to agree with everything Lorelai's saying and not me.
I'm listening to both of you. She's making fantastic points, that's all.
Yeah.
All right, now I'm in therapy. Or need to be. So one of the things I always think about, and I go back and forth. You talk about this too, Lorelai, because Lorelai's 11.
Yeah.
Now you got to tell me.
You're like 107 or something, right?
I said if I told her age, she had the same line, because it's not fair. You know how people go up and go, here's Lorelai, she's 11 years old, and shouldn't you say at the same time, and I'm 67.
Yeah.
and I'm 55, yeah.
Yeah, it's not fair just to tell the name of the age
it's
of the little.
It's not. I totally agree. So 67, 55, and 11.
Yeah.
Yep.
For that up to God. So what I was going to ask was, because I love reading these things. So do you think that like Lorelai at 11 or Beverly at 14, do you think Beverly, Ramey, and Louisiana are advanced for their age? Or do you feel like in your mind, this is the way I was, or this is the way the girls I have encountered are, you know, as tweens or no, as teenagers?
It's funny because I guess maybe I should be thinking about, like, here, with Rainy, that was just like, that's kind of like my set point. Even though I'm 55, 10 is where I am, and so I didn't have to think anything about, is this what a 10-year-old would think? It's so easy for me to slip into that skin of a 10-year-old. And then for a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old, I didn't think as much about age as I did about who they are as people, and just to follow that, which goes to the larger thing of, like, anytime I'm telling a story, I think always that my job is just to get out of the way and let the story lead me. And that means letting the characters lead me. So I didn't spend any time thinking, is this right or accurate for the age? I just thought, is this the person? Am I telling this story right?
Yeah, and another thing you do, and I do it too, not to give myself credit. Well, no one else will, so I might as well give it to myself.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, I never talk to kids like they're kids. You know, why should you? You just talk to them like they're grown-ups or like you. And I think when you do that, they become like Beverly or Ramey. Maybe not so much as Louisiana.
Yeah.
But they're very articulate, and they say exactly what they mean, and you get much better than saying, oh, how was school today? Or use your words or things like that.
Yeah, no, it's funny because, you know, back to me, like, being a 10-year-old, and I just remember that feeling of being condescended to all the time, and I was small for my age, and so I was condescended to doubly, you know, because I was just so small, and people were always patting me on the head verbally and literally, and I always am aware that I didn't want to be condescended to, and I don't want to condescend.
Yeah, in your biography on your website, you say you're short and loud.
True.
Well, Lorelai used to be short and loud, but now she's gotten really tall.
Now I'm just tall and loud.
Oh, how tall are you now?
Oh, gosh. How? 5 feet, probably, around, hopefully.
That's pretty good for 11.
It is pretty good for 11.
Well,
so, yeah,
as tall
so
as
I, and I'm 5'1", so oh. I'm a little taller.
Not for long. Lorelai has what I think is the best question ever, so we can close with this. So go ahead and ask it.
The last one?
Yeah.
I want to know what the crooked little C, like, symbolizes, or, like, what does it mean?
It is a great question, and I'm not able to answer it. This is the thing. Once this story has been out in the world for, like, I don't know, a year long enough for people to, like, read it and write all the reviews, somebody will tell me what it is, and then I'll be able to tell you. All I know is, like, it sounded right, and it sounded like something, it sounded like words that Beverly needs. And, you know, it's one of those things where if I sat and thought about it for a long time, I could figure out what it means and what it means within the context of the story. But I never do that when I'm writing, because then I feel like the whole thing is going to fall apart. It's always like I'm aware that there's some deeper meaning to those words, and I see it out of the corner of my eye, but I don't look at it directly because then I'm going to mess it up. And so I just think that means something, I'm not sure what. And if I were to sit there and try to untangle the knot of what it means, then I wouldn't tell the story. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like... Yeah.
So when you take this interview into your class, you can have the class tell me.
Okay.
And then,
they can write her a letter.
Ooh.
Yeah, and then you can write a letter and tell me what it means. Because I know there is some meaning there, but I don't know what it is.
Well, it's poetic, and like any poem, you know, you really, it's like you were
What's
saying.
That?
It's poetic, and like any poem, it is like you say, if you see it out of the corner of your eye, but if you look directly at it, it just goes away like a floater in your eye or something, you know what I mean?
Right, or like a dream, right?
Yeah.
Well, and yeah.
And that's the way Louisiana thinks, too. It's like lately when I read, even when I was reading your book and I fall asleep and I'm still reading it, I start kind of semi-dreaming the book, and the words appear, but then when I wake up, I won't go, wait a minute, that's not in there. And
oh, that's nice.
I know, it is. Very
You
pleasant.
Should be careful that you don't tell that to a fiction writer who doesn't steal all of that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened. Could happen with Lorelei.
Oh, gosh.
Well, so do you think we've seen... I didn't know at the beginning how you said you don't generally recur characters, but do you think we'll ever see them again? Because I'll miss them if we don't.
Yeah,
you know, what would be... Because there's a part of me that is certain that these girls stay friends for the rest of their lives. And so what would be really fun to do, and I don't know that I'll do it, is to write a book about them as adults.
Oh, really? But you've never done that.
No, I haven't, no. And I don't know that I will, but that interests me.
Yeah, me too. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
And by the time I finish it, Lorelei, you'll be older than I am. So.
Oh, gosh. Then I get to read it.
Right.
Okay, well, that was great. And I know it seems like you're pressed for time because they told me I had to be out at 1:55, and it's a little past that. But
yeah, I'm working on rewrites, so it's just, nothing's going to happen to me except that it won't get done. And I had a great time talking with y'all.
Same.
Yeah, and like I said, I miss Louisiana, but anytime you're out, I'll call you guys again, and hopefully you'll come and talk to us.
Yeah, I would love that.
Okay. Thanks a lot so much, Kate.
Okay, and Lorelei, let me know what it means about the crooked
All right.
little house by the crooked little sea.
Yes, we'll do it. Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Bye. All right.
Bye.
Take care, you guys.
You too.
Bye. Thank you.
So we were talking with Kate DiCamillo about her brand new book, Beverly Wright Here, and Lorelei and I had a great time talking to her, and she seemed to pay more attention to Lorelei than me, which is very upsetting for me. But be that as it may, please come back. Join us every week on The Avid Reader for what I consider and what Rebecca considers insightful and engaging discussions with today's most compelling authors. So we have coming up the New York Times journalist, this is really good, Robin Pogrebin and Kate Kelly, and they're going to discuss their book, The Education of Brett Kavanaugh, and Investigation, which, you know, he's on the Supreme Court, and he's going to be there for 30 years, and every day he's going to take away one of our civil rights. So part of me is like, well, here we are, so I really don't care about his education, but it's a fascinating book. Then Michael Graziano, my kind of book, is going to discuss Rethinking Consciousness, a scientific theory of subjective experience, basically how we know we are here, how we know we are something, how we know we're alive, how we know we're anything. And then Dexter Palmer will join us to talk about his latest, Mary Toft, or The Rabbit Queen, which is really weird, and I think you'll like it. So for a complete schedule, you can go to our website, wellingtonsquarebooks.com, or you can simply download our podcasts at iTunes or Podomatic. iTunes is easy because you just have the podcast app, and there it is, The Avid Reader, and you can listen to me talk for 400 hours, which would be like being in hell. In any event, thanks so much for joining us today, and we hope to have you back here next week on The Avid Reader.